Good morning, good afternoon, good tax season to all of you. In today's episode, we'll talk about archives and archiving with Jillian Witt, Community Engagement Lead for The Philanthropist. Now you might ask yourself, what is The Philanthropist? Well, The Philanthropist is an online journal for those interested and engaged in the charitable and nonprofit sector in Canada. All right, now stretch, laugh, and make yourself a good cup of coffee because The Philab Podcast starts now. Good afternoon, Jillian. Would it be possible for you to start by introducing yourself?
My name is Jillian Witt, and I am the Community Engagement Lead at The Philanthropist Journal.
What is The Philanthropist?
So The Philanthropist Journal is a journal by and for the nonprofit sector. We've been around since 1972, and we write on issues that matter to the nonprofit sector, to volunteers, workers, advisors to the sector.
Then let's go back in time and let's see how did The Philanthropist start? What is its history?
The Philanthropist Journal started in 1972 by a special committee on charitable organization of the Canadian Bar Association in Ontario, which is now the Ontario Bar Association. So it really has roots in the legal community. The first editor was the Honorable Bertha Wilson. So the focus was really legal, accounting, governance matters in the early years. And sometimes publishing was a bit intermittent. And then over the years, it's grown and become a broader journal with more voices. We moved from a print journal in 2009 to being online. And today we are a mix of about 50% writing that's written by sector leaders, writing to their peers about issues that matter to them. And about 50% of our writing is professional writers, journalists, covering stories about the sector.
Can you see a difference between when it's people working within the field and you know, actors that might have a step back and trying to look at the field from a certain distance?
Absolutely. And I think that's why we like that mix of writing. So I think there's a benefit to sector leaders having a space to talk to their peers and share their opinions. And they're also writing, though, with an organizational hat on and from a specific perspective. And when we work with journalists on a story, they're able to interview people from all sorts of organizations. Our recent piece that Sharon Riley did on kind of looking ahead at what's to come for the nonprofit sector in 2024 includes voices, 15 different leaders. And so they come from different parts of the country. They're working on different issues. They represent kind of small and large organizations. And so there's a benefit to having that space for analysis and different perspectives in one story too.
Would you be able to say how was academia introduced into The Philanthropist, or what exactly is the space that academia holds within The Philanthropist?
Over the years, we've partnered with academics and academic institutions. Susan Phillips has been on our editorial advisory in the past. Peter Ellison has a piece that's one of our most popular over the last 50 years, which is Short History of Voluntary Sector and Government Relations. And we've worked with legal scholars as well and partnered with, you know, Philab. So we've always had kind of a relationship to academia in that sort of way. Also, when we moved from being a print journal in 2009, we collaborated with the Center for Scholarly Publishing at Simon Fraser University, and they were kind of the platform for our writing from 2009 to 2014. So there's always been a relationship with, you know, the people that study the sector, much as the people that are in the sector.
Right now, we could say that, you know, The Philanthropist is a leader in archiving philanthropy in Canada. Maybe let's go into the history of archiving within The Philanthropist. How did it start? Where does it come from? Who had the idea? Is there a story around the beginning of archiving within The Philanthropist?
It's so interesting because I don't think we ever saw ourselves as leaders in archiving, but my best hunch is that because of our relationship to the legal community, there was always a tradition of, you know, formally archiving our writing and indexing. And so if you look back, there are even old indexes in our that we published every so often. When we moved the print to our online site, we were able to organize things so that everything is dated, but also tagged by issue or impact area, so that you can go and search over 50 years of archives. It's 1,500 articles, over 1,000 contributors who wrote those pieces. All of that is available now on our site, and that's how our current site archives our content.
So in a way, could you say that you were lucky that because of the legal background of the philanthropist, it was actually easier for you to go back in time and look through your archives?
Yeah, I think there was always a commitment to preservation and saving what people had contributed over that time. And so it made it easy as we changed, you know, digital platforms to ensure that that content remained there. And Mutart Foundation, I should mention, gave us a grant that allowed us to move those physical journal copies online.
What is the importance for these archives to be available for free on your platform?
I think we see the journal, I see us stewarding, you know, knowledge and resources that people have contributed to the journal over that time. And so it makes sense to me that it would always be free and accessible. And I think that's a commitment from the whole team and our board. It's not expensive to do and keep it available and accessible for everyone. And we try to make use of that writing as well. We share a piece from our archives in our weekly newsletter, and often we'll link back to it in current writing just to understand and learn from our past and kind of see where we're going.
I just love the idea of learning from our past. Were there some elements that you learned, you know, throughout the process of archiving in terms of the philanthropist? For example, are there moments that, you know, in history that were captured and that maybe you were surprised by or that changed maybe your perception on either the journal or even the, you know, the sector in of itself?
Sure. Well, as far as moments in history, we have the sector's reaction to both the election of Pierre Elliott Trudeau and of Justin Trudeau. And so those reactions are both captured when there were the political activities chill that happened about 10, 15 years ago. That's really captured the sector's reaction and working through that. In 2015, we have the Philanthropic Declaration of Action that was presented at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's closing ceremony. After the murder of George Floyd, Senator Omidvar had a real bold call to the sector to really look at itself, especially the lack of diversity within our boards. And so that's also captured in the archives. Really interesting to go back and see where we've come from. I think you asked about what surprises me, and I think some of the things that we think are new discussions or new challenges have actually been topics since the very beginning of the journal. And so, like, I was looking back in 1972, we have a writing on kind of the power and privilege of foundations, and if that's right. We have in the next year, we're talking about how conservative private philanthropy is. So that's 1973. In 1983, we have writing on kind of the outdated definitions of charities, which, you know, these are all common conversations today. And, you know, they've been, you know, around for the past 50 years.
And would you say that those topics were, you know, one article out of maybe like dozens, or it was actually part of, you know, the main discourse of, you know, the sector? Because, you know, sometimes maybe some voices would just talk about it, and it's like one voice that would have one article in, you know, like the bottom of a page. But then would those topics be actually really investigated and try to push forward, but nothing would actually come out of it?
I don't know if I've done a you know, a thorough analysis of that, and that would be a great academic project for someone. But it seems to me that these are not one-off topics when I look back at the archives.
It's very interesting how we can start creating some links and trying to dive a bit further within some topics, like you said, that feel very new, but then in a way it's stuff that we can just look back and people have the same questions. It's just maybe the angle would be different. So moving on, would it be possible for you to share maybe something that was considered a blind spot within the philanthropist or even within the sector that you saw within the archive that sort of rang the bell?
Our focus in the early days was really technical. And so that means that a lot of other things were not captured. And also the voices tended to be from, you know, legal community, from, you know, governance experts, finance experts. And so other voices are not included, and that's reflected in the journal. So that means that there are things missing, just like there are things missing today. And I'd love to hear what this conversation sounds like in, you know, 50 years plus.
Would you say that the philanthropist actually opened up a door in terms of diversity of voices, and specifically in terms of the legal sector becoming the buy-in for of today that we see? But would you say that in a way you're proud of this evolution in the philanthropist right now? And maybe there are some, you know, some future changes that you'll also look forward to.
I think it's a great evolution because we have so many people to be learning from. And it also just reflects the sector itself and how it's changing. Right now we have a fellowship with 5 fellows who are under the age of 30, Black and Indigenous, who care about issues of work and working in the nonprofit sector. And they are all bringing forward ideas and topics and challenging things in the sector that we haven't written about or recorded, because we have 2 of them will be podcast episodes. And so that's really exciting. The more voices we have shaping what we're thinking about, what we're imagining for the nonprofit sector, the better.
I might go a little bit off book right now, but you talked about, you know, a podcast, and I was wondering right now, is the philanthropist opening itself up to new formats to try to reach, you know, a specific audience, or is that some of the reasons why you're moving forward with some of those projects?
Most of our writing in the last while has been long form, because we felt like that was an area we could really contribute. And the feedback we were getting from readers was that we were bringing a level of nuance and depth to various topics that was necessary. That said, because of our format, we can do things, and we have published a few podcasts in the past. We have the opportunity to do that. And especially if that's something that a fellow wants to explore and we can help provide the space for that, then we want to do that. We've also published poetry on occasion, but I would definitely say our main gig is really that long form writing. And it's something we're always trying to balance, because our sector has a variety of needs too, right? So there's a need for those nuanced, in-depth pieces, but we also know that people need practical work that they can apply to their own area of the sector. And that reminds me that one of the things I didn't mention, as far as like capturing in time moments in history, because it's still so present, but the pandemic, I mean, we have the sector's response to the pandemic, and that was like a time where we were publishing in much more newsy style, because people weren't in a reflection space, right? They were responding and having to really change strategy, change course very quickly. And we have that captured in the archives too. I remember looking at the publication calendar, and like things are rapidly changing. And it was like, this piece no longer makes sense to publish right now, you know? We had to delay some or revisit them or tweak, because it didn't reflect where people were at. And then now we find ourselves in a time where we're seeing the impact of the pandemic on the communities that, you know, organizations are working in, and then on the workplace culture, and then on the sector itself, and its ability to survive. I'm now feeling like that was a big gap in my conversation about when I think back, because it feels like it's such recent history, you know, that we're in it still.
And maybe going back in terms of archiving more specifically, how do you deal with censorship? Were there some moments that you saw the possibility of or just being unsure about, should we publish this article? Because in today's voice and, you know, maybe some wording, it's very dangerous and could be harmful and stuff like that. So how, in terms of the process of archiving, how did you deal with some of those situations?
I don't think we've had a situation where we looked back and felt like something needed to drastically be changed because it would cause harm. We certainly have articles that use language that we wouldn't today. Nothing incredibly offensive, just the language has evolved over time. But what we have seen in a few cases are pieces that we've published where a writer wants to go back and build on what they said or reflect on what it means today. For example, Peter Elson's short history on the voluntary sector and government relations. The original that he published, he went back with Peyton Carmichael and they co-published a new version that we have on our site that includes a few different sections, including, and it's a theme that runs throughout, but the sector's relationship to Indigenous people is much more part of the writing than it was in the original piece.
And how do you think it benefits the archive in of itself? Do you see it as adding nuance or adding a new layer to the first article? Is it something that happens often, or it's just once in a while that you see those authors going back and self-reflect on their writings?
It happens on occasion, or when we share a piece that's from the archive, sometimes we'll see someone post on social media, well, I thought that then, this is where I'm at now. And, you know, nothing, usually just kind of building on where they were at that time and where things are today. But there's so much learning that happens from capturing that original piece or thought or idea and being able to see what it means in our current context. Just thinking back also, like we've done a lot of writing on the sector during times of austerity. And so as governments change, you know, what that's meant for people in the charitable sector, in the nonprofit sector, what sector leaders have advocated for. And so we can look back and learn for future times of austerity as well.
So if I'm not mistaken, history allows us to reflect and be able to not feel that we don't have tools that we could use for the future. There's actually references that we can go back and really lay some foundations for today's generation that might go through the same struggles. Would you sort of go into that direction with the use of the archive in some way?
That's beautifully put. Yeah. So it allows us to remember that we have gone through challenging times in the past, what we've learned from them, so that we can apply it to the future. And I should also say, because we have, you know, we have a lot of writing on legal and regulatory work. So a lawyer would speak to this in different ways, some of our writing and how they're able to go back to it and how it informs their work as well.
Wow. Those are moments I love. It's always the small moments I do enjoy. All right. So final question for you. One of the most important question. Now we've looked at the past. Let's look at the future. From your perspective, what will the future look like for the philanthropist?
That's a great question that we are, you know, asking ourselves at the very moment. We have a series that we're in the midst of, written by Tim Harper. He's been speaking to people that have been involved in the journal in a variety of ways. Our board, which is the Agora Foundation board, our editorial advisory members, readers, writers that have been involved in the sector. And he's been asking kind of, you know, what we need to be paying attention to and what should we be holding on to and what do we need to let go. So I encourage anyone listening, if you're not subscribed to The Philanthropist, it is free. Go to thephilanthropist.ca, subscribe, and also check out that writing as well as the writing from our fellows that's coming up. There's lots of exciting things on the go, so please join us.
That's our show. To continue the conversation around archives and archiving, join us on our different platforms for more content and share your comments. We'd like to thank Jillian for this conversation and PhilLab for hosting this educational podcast. I would also like to thank the amazing production team without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. We have Catherine McDonald as head of production and Philemon Lafrenière-Prémont as co-producer, researcher, and editor. Thank you again for being part of our podcast community. Stay curious, compassionate, and courageous. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, take care and goodbye.